Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Good day, Sean. It is great to have you, and good day to all our listeners. My name is Ashton Furie. I am running the next series of the Zawani Risk podcast, and we are privileged to have Sean here this morning. A quick intro of myself. I am the founder of 5to50 and the group COO for KVR Equity. At 5to50, we focus on helping small businesses grow. We're a community of Christian small business entrepreneurs with a vision to create a million good jobs and use that as a tool to eradicate poverty. At KVR Equity, we are a human capital solutions investment company with several companies that focus on human capital with training and development at the core of everything that we do. And I have a basic life philosophy that says that God sits at the center of all reality, and I define everything by how it relates to God. Does it relate correctly to Him as the center of all reality? I'm really honored to have Sean join me this morning. Good morning, Sean.
Hi, Ashton. Good morning. Good morning to our listeners as well.
Sean Tiernison is a social entrepreneur and a corporate executive. He's recognized for advancing socioeconomic inclusion and enterprise development. And as a founder of Property Point and Entrepreneurship to the Point, he has driven measurable impact for entrepreneurs across South Africa. Sean is respected thought leader. He serves on multiple global and African boards. And whenever I've had the privilege of sharing any conversations with Sean, I've always really been impressed with his depth of thought and his breadth of insight across various issues that relate to South Africa and to Africa and the challenges that we face. So Sean, can you maybe quickly do a short intro of yourself and a brief overview of your career journey?
Yeah, Ashton. So I guess I find myself at this point in time, firstly, being a husband and a father of four girls. Based out in Stellenbosch, married to Karen, my wife, and enjoying the lovely mountains of the Boerland, in a sense. But that's been definitely not where the journey started for me. So we moved to Stellenbosch about 3 years ago, but from Johannesburg, and grew up in a township called Westbury. So I'm not sure if you have a context of Westbury. It's probably one of the most gang-ridden townships based in South Africa. So it's a colored township, and I was born in 1978 and grew up in a time in South Africa when I guess things were transitioning and people were still figuring out things. And it was during the time of kind of coming out of apartheid and moving into a new disposition. But also coming from a community and a family that was quite entrenched in poverty, in the community was very much ridden with gangsterism and drugs. You start getting a different perspective around life, and that also shaped how I think about things. I think that's, if I look at my kind of career journey, I think where I came from, the context has really shaped my thinking about systems and opportunities. And as we're speaking today about risk, it definitely shaped my perspective on risk. And I think one of the key things for me was I was probably had to get an understanding of these concepts long before I had the language for it. Just in terms of my family background as well, I'm the youngest of six siblings. When I grew up, my mom and dad was they were divorced. They got married again when I was probably about 10, 11 years old. But at age of 12, I lost my dad, and my mom was a single mom rearing me on a disability pension and an entire family at the time. And I guess also losing my dad early in life carried a lot of uncertainty, but also meant that there was a sense of responsibility that came into place. And I think risk for me is not an abstract thing when it affects your survival. it's something that you're going to start learning very quickly to balance and make those decisions and choices. Because at the end of the day, I think risk is always about making a specific decision around which way to go. I often reflect and say that my journey has been shaped by, there's a poem by Robert Frost called Two Roads, or The Road Not Taken. And he describes in the poem, he speaks about these two roads that diverged in a yellow wood. And being the traveler there, you say, sorry, you could not travel both. And be one traveler along, I stood and looked down one as far as I could until we bent in the undergrowth. And the traveler needed to make a decision around which road to take. And I often say that was how I took my view on life, is like, which road do I take? Because that's also how you weigh up the risk factor. I was the first person in my family to be able to have the opportunity to go and attend university and study. I studied industrial psychology. I fumbled my way through university, put it that way. And eventually at year three, I went into industrial psychology and business management, and really found my passion around getting an understanding of how people show up, think, but also around strategy and how we need to make certain strategic decisions. I then also had, from a career perspective, had to study full-time and work full-time. And I transitioned myself initially from being a call center agent at a young age into taking up strong leadership roles in corporate SA in various large companies. One of the reflections that I've had is very much embedded in Proverbs 4 verse 7. And that's the scripture that speaks about wisdom. And it says, you know, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and in all you're getting, get understanding. And I think that for me, risk has always been about understanding what's before you. Context is important. People are important. The systems are important. And that allows you to be able to make the right decisions in the various context. In my kind of journey, I was able to also be quite unfortunate in a sense, where I was able to get a scholarship to do my master's degree in Denmark. And I did a master's degree in human-centered thinking and design thinking. And then through doing my thesis, I was really much focused around how am I able to provide assistance to others, really focused around social innovation. And that led me to the establishment of what is today called Property Point, which is a business support incubation program. Often if I reflect around this in the context of risk, my own personal exposure to instability has developed my risk literacy and appetite. You know, I needed to balance being growing up in an environment where you had uncertainty, or you didn't have a father, you had a community that was unstable or gang-ridden, or you wanted to thrive from an education perspective, or even working while studying. It's a balancing act between your resources, and that's constraint on one side, but also your ability then to make decisions. So that's in a nutshell, hopefully, perspective on who I am and where I've come from.
Yeah, no, look, that is an amazing story, Sean. And I think there's so much in there in terms of shaping, exactly as you said, how your upbringing, how your experience, how the types of risks that you face. If I think of our audience and the different people that we have listening, investors maybe from all over the world, entrepreneurs both from Africa and from other parts of the world, and just understanding how risk looks different when you've grown up in the kind of environment that you have versus the environment that many of them grow up in, and the ability to bridge that, I think, because of where you are today. But maybe if you could expand a little bit on your thoughts. Obviously, there's what you've experienced yourself, but you have now also worked with a lot of people and seen how risk can be real risk or maybe a perception in terms of background, voice, the context that people come from, the way that they look. So have you got any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think what I realized is that risk is often something placed on you before you do anything wrong or right. You know, it's that unconscious bias, it's assigned to you based on your accent, based on the color of your skin, based on your background, your confidence levels, where you come from. And this was actually very much at the core of me shaping some of the research that I did in my master's and in my thesis. And it was around, we work with a concept in the work that I developed called the three R's. And it's very much saying there's a moment in life where you get a chance to rewrite your narrative. But you only get that chance if someone is willing to see beyond the label. So how are you able to really start shaping that? And just to kind of get into kind of the mental model of the three R's, it's focused on risk initially and how risk is shaped by the perceptional value of others, by the unconscious bias that we already have in our frame of reference. And then in order to overcome this risk factor or to minimize this risk factor, we need to focus on our reputation. And reputation speaks about track records, who we are, what's our value proposition that we able to do. And reputation is built through delivery. It's what you've done before. And then lastly, in that model, we speak about relationships and how breaking down these perceptions and these unconscious bias and kind of getting to know each other as people reduces uncertainty. And those things become quite transformative in order to be able to understand risks, because whether you are an investor or you are a believer or you are a leader trying to make decisions, you're going to need to be able to base that on something, you know. And we, as human beings, we don't really know how often our level of unconscious bias or the context that we came from actually influences those decision makings. And in the scriptures in 1 Samuel 16 verse 7, it actually says, God reminds us, he says that people look at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And that very much is around this context of perception. And the scripture really shapes how I think about risk, and it warns us about the surface level assessments. And so in terms of looking at these kind of three R's, your perceived risk cannot be your operational risk. And it's not a set of just indicators that you're going to measure someone or financial indicators. It needs to get to the heart. Are we taking the time out to ensure that we understand the context of the next person a little bit better in order to start shaping an operational risk profile as well? The second thing is bias inflates uncertainty. So what's the blind spots that we have that we need to overcome? What's the narrative that we've been fed that shapes how we look at others? And then I think thirdly, from a business perspective, is proximity improves signal quality. That means that if you are able to build relationships, get an understanding of others, we are going to understand each other a little bit better. And many a times, especially based on the context of South Africa, we have an arm's length relationship with our fellow brothers and sisters, our fellow South Africans, because we don't necessarily always understand who's in your circle and how are you ensuring that circle, you are creating an environment that you are able to get a proximity to understand other people that's not like you a little bit better.
I think that is so profound. The thing that really stood out for me as you were speaking about that is getting this understanding that, so we often, you know, once you're reasonably successful in business, you're managing the risk of the people for whom you are creating opportunity, basically, if you can put it that way. You're promoting someone in a position, or you are, if you're an investor, you're investing in somebody's business. And so we always think of risk from that perspective of, What are the boxes, as you said, like the boxes that you can tick to go, okay, I understand this uncertainty and I'm managing the risk in this way. But what you said earlier in terms of there's actually a certain assignment of risk that happens before any of those boxes tick at a heart level. And that if that I'm actually in a position where I walk into a relationship, if I'm the person who is potentially getting helped in the scenario, and if I can become aware of the fact that there is an inherent risk assigned to me before I even start this conversation. And I think it's really powerful how you view it from both of those sides of saying you need to understand how people perceive you, but you don't need to understand that just as a, oh, there's nothing I can do about this. I am being negatively judged here by somebody else. You can actually actively manage if you understand what are some of those risks that the other person sees. So I think that's really powerful that there is a two-way game here. And for everybody on this podcast, whether you're on this side or that side of the table, whether you feel prejudiced against or whether you may be at risk of prejudicing against, if that's a word, prejudicing, being prejudiced against somebody that you are busy considering working with, to clearly understand like what is that uncertainty and then to say, how can we get across that uncertainty? How can I get past my heart bias and identify, is this a real risk? Because there might be some real risks from an upbringing, from an environment somebody comes out of, which causes a lack of understanding of certain things, which creates risk. Do you have any actual like practical examples maybe of one or two entrepreneurs or startups where you've worked with and used this 3R concept, the concept of risk, reputation, and relationship, and how that worked and how that practically helps people think through this process?
For us, we, if I just kind of create a bit of more context in terms of the work that Property Point does, is it was a saying, okay, how am I able to go out there and teach someone how to fish? You know, how do I not just go and give someone a fish? Or beyond just teaching someone how to fish, how am I able to go and help them understand the fishing industry? You know, it's giving a little bit more. And beyond that, it was also for me saying, how am I able to go and restore people's dignity by giving them the tools and the support in order for them to be able to gain it for themselves? And so we work with small Black businesses and provide that context. But if we then put the layer of the 3 R's on it, is that ultimately we want to ensure that we are minimizing the unconscious bias of these businesses and elevating their value, their reputation, what they've done. So maybe to share an example of one of the entrepreneurs that we work with, Teboho Maloy, she's the managing director of Ukanswe Holdings, and they work within the energy and construction space. And if I look at the applying the 3R model on the work that she's done, it was really, the focus was on not on systems before scale. And when Teboho joined the program, the issue was not talent, it was structure. She was competent. She was able to really run the business, but she lacked the necessary structure in her business. So once systems, governance and networks were in place, her risk profile changed dramatically. She was qualified enough to run a business. But then we were able to then also put her track record forward. And track record also looks at de-risking the procurement opportunities in the market, because it shows that she has been able to do that. And then ultimately, the last part is on the relationship side. So our support mechanisms is always to say, how are we able to build the networks, get them in front of the clients? So one of the clients that she was working with, we were running a sustainability innovation program for them in their supply chain. And that gave her an opportunity to be able to showcase her work. And in building those relationships, there was a faster trust transfer. Because trust is also a positive indicator of risk. You know, if by building trust, you are reducing those risk factors. So those were kind of key elements for me in terms of Teboho's journey. But also, I think that if we look at what the scriptures say. So in Luke 16, verse 10, it speaks about whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. In the context of De Bojo, her ability to showcase her faithfulness at every stage allowed her to scale afterwards, because the little that she had, she was able to now be teachable, put the systems and structures in place in order to start growing the business that she had the competency of running. And that allowed her to be able to really scale her business. Another example is one of our Cape Town businesses, EDW Cape. And the founder there, Kaelin Edwards, was actually a quantity surveyor, and he ran the business with his wife. She was a civil engineer, so highly competent and running quite a good, successful business. But there, the challenge was the resilience and strategic focus. So this was during COVID that we had started working with these businesses, and COVID exposed the fragility of their business model, as it did with so many other businesses. They had to simplify what they were doing. They had to kind of focus on the core element of the business. So all the other periphery elements within that business needed to be taken away because of the fact that there was no market, there was no opportunity. But they needed to learn, how do we focus on our strengths? So crisis forces risk prioritization. And that allowed them to be able to ensure that they are able to get through the challenges of COVID. In their context, it was about strategy before expansion. Don't try and take the business and just go out and do, but make sure that you're working on the core element. And part of that was putting good governance elements in place.
That is so good. A few thoughts that just jumped out for me there, sort of starting from the back there, is this concept of focus and saying, what is the highest priority and deal with that first? What is the risk that is really threatening your business? And I think lack of focus creates a risk in itself, as we saw with COVID, with so many businesses. Those who weren't able to focus on what was really the core of the business often just ended up not having enough resources to get through it. But something else that really stood out for me when you were talking, especially about De Bojo, was two things. The one about structure as a mechanism to reduce risk. So to be able to say, okay, if I've got the right structures in place, I can get the right information to know exactly what is happening around uncertainty and to remove a lot of the uncertainty. But the other one that really stood out for me was, so there was De Bojo. She's highly competent. They're missing some structure, but they're also missing access to certain resources in terms of access to clients, maybe access to funding, whatever the access was. And you helped them open certain of those doors. And I think there's a really powerful thing, and that's trust by association. So because Sean Tiernison said, I'm willing to take the risk on De Bojo, possibly some client, some corporate client, maybe a bank, maybe whoever it was that was involved in the specific scenario says, I know Sean. I trust Sean. If Sean trusts De Bojo, I'm willing to take a chance on De Bojo. And so do you think there is something in there in terms of being able, as a person already has trust, to almost put some of your trust out on surety on somebody else that you're trying to help?
Ashton, I think you've hit the nail on the head. And that's exactly what our value proposition is as Property Point to the market. We often say that we go out and we do the hard work for our clients, whether it's the financiers that wants to be able to fund these small businesses, or whether it's the market access holder or procurement or supply chains that's willing to take an opportunity on these businesses. We build that trust factor into it. We go out and vet, we work with these guys, we mentor them, we provide them with the necessary inputs. And that allows us to almost de-risk the process for supply chains or for financiers in order to take a chance on the business. Our reputation goes before the business's reputation in order to ensure that that door becomes a door opener they're able to provide or get the access that they need. One of the key factors that I've learned over all these years is no one's looking for handouts. If you are a credible business individual that has the heart and the passion and the skill, you want to be able to succeed in a marketplace that's thriving. You don't want something that is just a handout. And by putting in the right mechanisms and support, we stand behind these entrepreneurs, breaking barriers, creating opportunities, creating jobs. And maybe just to showcase some of, I've given a broad overview of the business and the challenges, but what have they done actually post all the support? How have they grown? And in the case, for instance, of Tebogo, her revenue grew quite substantially from when we initially started. We take a 2-year journey with the business. And on baseline, she came in at a revenue of 3 million per annum. And to date in 2025, by last year, her revenue had grown to 53 million. She expanded her offering, creating job opportunities from initially starting with 4 employees to over 30 employees at the moment, and developing a woman-led team of electricians. So working in the artisan space and showcasing that both a woman-owned business and a woman-led business is able to thrive and have had the recognition from the industry and have been able to scale.
So if I could connect to that and say, so with Tebogo, let's stay on this example while we're there. I mean, there are lots of people out there every day that come across our paths that you go, oh, it looks like they've got an interesting business. They seem like a nice enough person, et cetera, et cetera. You try and sort of look past your biases. How did you get past that sort of perceived risk versus real risk? And how do you make the decision to say, you know what, Tebogo is somebody I'm going to walk a path with?
I think for us, our aim is always to ensure that we take the time out in terms of selecting of businesses. And I think personally, what I've really looked at when engaging with businesses is the ability to be teachable. That is critical. So we often firstly look at the attitude of the business. Is this business willing to allow others to come in? Because as Property Point, we an MPO, we don't take any equity in the business. We are funded through corporate enterprise and supply development funding. And our aim is to really walk alongside that business and be the best kind of cheerleader. This business still needs to focus on, they need to build, they need to work in it. But in order to get to go forward, they need to be teachable. And that means they need to say, actually, I'm going to allow someone external to the business to give me input. And as part of that is also sometimes the concept of tough love. So in order to take someone forward, sometimes you're going to tell them things that they're not going to like. If their business is not in place, so if I look at the Tebogo's business, the governance structures were not in place. The business systems were not in place. Their ability to organize initially and to plan effectively was not in place. And that are things that they need to say, okay, I'm willing to put the work in order to grow what I need to grow from my business perspective.
Have you found that there's a correlation between the amount of time you spend with entrepreneurs and getting to know them versus your perception of risk of those entrepreneurs as you build that relationship?
Definitely. I think that it goes back to our frame of reference. If anyone walks into the door, you're going to have a specific perception around who they are based on your unconscious bias. But really then taking the opportunity to unpack who they are, what they've done, how they've gotten to where they've gotten to, allows you to minimize, and it shifts that risk profile that you have of them. I often think, even in my own introduction, you know, it's easy to start off and say, you know, I'm this kind of corporate executive, social entrepreneur living in Stellenbosch. That creates a total different perception. Versus saying, you know, I'm this dancer boy from Westbury coming from gangs and drugs, creates a total different perception. Just in those two sentences gives the receiver totally different context to who you are.
I think that is so good. And one of the things you just mentioned there triggered for me this realization that what about one's own perception of your own risk as an individual? So it's one thing to say, I'm taking a chance on someone else and I'm getting to know them and I'm managing my perception of them as a risk. But what about the way that we see ourselves? What have you experienced and seen in terms of you building that relationship with somebody who comes in and maybe they come into your door and they're not actually confident in their own ability, which then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because I don't have confidence in myself. Let's take a Tebogo, for example. Like maybe part of the reason for a business getting stuck at 3 million rand revenue is because I don't actually believe I can run a business bigger than 3 million. I don't have that confidence in myself. And then someone like you comes along and you say, but I've seen people like you do more. And I see something in you in terms of potential and in terms of who you really are that you maybe don't even see yourself. Have you seen that impact also on the individuals that you're working with in terms of the growth that then enables them to grow their businesses?
Yes, no, definitely. I think that it's a combination of both that kind of personal journey, but also being systematic in that approach in order to ensure that you are giving them a different perspective. And I think I've spoken about the mentorship role that we kind of play with the businesses. And mentorship reduces risk because it shortens the learning curves and it transfers tacit knowledge and it provides social proof.
Can you repeat those points again? I think that is so good.
Hopefully I get it the same way, but I think it's about being able to walk a journey with someone, and mentorship allows you to be able to reduce the risk because it shortens the learning curve. You're spending so much time with each other and it transfers tacit knowledge and it also provides social proof around what has been done and how it can be done. And those things is important to build into the confidence of a business.
I think we can land this plane on that, and especially on those points. I really like that about the shortening of the learning curve. So that reduces your risk from a time perspective. The transferring of that tacit knowledge of somebody the other day used the word, they said living or being wise is to live skillfully. And that is, I think, when you talk about that tacit knowledge, it's about being skillful in the way that you take things forward, and then the social proof. By merely being able to say, like I have found this, for example, I've got certain mentors who are a lot more successful than what I am. And I haven't done it on purpose, but I've noticed that sometimes if in a conversation I mention so-and-so is a mentor of mine, I can immediately see the response of trust of people increasing in me because they realize that person has seen something in me to make it worth their time to spend time with me. So that social proof, I think, is really powerful. So if I can sort of wrap it all up, I think the key thoughts that came out of this for me is for those of us who are Christian investors, business leaders, senior decision makers, especially within the Ziwani community that's listening to this podcast, we carry a God-given responsibility to help others flourish. And I think that means that the question shifts from how do I protect myself from risk to how do I responsibly use what I've been given to create dignity, opportunity, and long-term value. Because that is then the opposite of risk. So our faith needs to be expressed through action and not through our sentiment and our bias, et cetera, et cetera. So how do we use what we have to actually remove risk by actually leaning into that risk? But what other people perceive as risk, we step into that. And by us stepping into that, we are showing that we are willing to see this as less risky than others see it, for example. Secondly, we should have the humility to check our own bias. That's something that, as you were talking, it really, I just realized all of us have bias constantly and asking ourselves, are we rejecting people or are we assigning a higher risk because of real operational risk? Or is it simply because of our mental models of what successful looks like or what potential looks like? And then third, I think backing entrepreneurs is not just about funding, but it includes that access to networks, mentorship, market entry, credibility, that we can take some of our social capital and we can literally transfer it onto somebody else and give them some of that social capital by association. And it takes nothing from me. It's one of those things I can invest, but that investment doesn't make what I've got less. On the contrary, I think it's one of those things that the more I give away of it, the more I will get. And then working alongside entrepreneurs rather than evaluate them from a distance. And I think the fourth point that really for me was an eye opener here was that idea of, yes, we look at risk typically from what am I as an investor, a business leader, a mentor, how am I perceiving the risk in the other person? But each one of us, when we walk into a conversation, there's risk assigned to us from the other side. And as you said, before I've even done or said anything, there's risk assigned to me. And by being aware of that, I can actively try and manage that risk. Sean, this has been phenomenal. I've had so many good insights from this. Any last comments from yourself?
Yeah, I think, just reflecting around it, I think what I've learned, Ashton, is that when you stay away from people, risk feels high. When you move closer, risks become clearer. And I think specifically as Christian leaders, you know, we have a responsibility in terms of how we show up and how we view risk. I think you've mentioned it as well. So for Christian leaders, the question isn't how do I protect myself from risk? It's how do I responsibly use what I've been given to help others flourish? And Micah 6 verse 8 says, and it calls us to act justly, to love mercifully, and to walk humbly. And that's not soft. It's actually disciplined leadership. And it's about being able to say, how do we show up as leaders, not just having a biblical view. Something that really inspired me as a Christian leader is a book that I've read a few years ago. It's called The Hole in the Gospel. And it was really one of the earlier executives of World Vision that spoke about the fact that as Christians, it's not just about being in church on a Sunday and wanting to just bless and pray for people or giving to charity and doing good deeds. But it's about being able to go into the field and being the hand extended of God in the marketplace as well. But I think also from a business perspective, you know, our faith needs to be expressed through structures. I chose to put my passion and my purpose into a structure, and that became the work that I do in Property Point or Entrepreneurship to the Point or any other venture that I actually get involved in. You know, I've purposefully gone to say that I want to make this world a little bit of a better place. It's a soft factor, but I've chosen to ensure that where I've invest my time in needs to yield impact. And that impact needs to be expressed through systems. You know, so it needs to be in a way that people can relate to, both from a market perspective, but also from a leadership perspective, and build the credibility and trust. And it's not just the soft elements that's coming through, but also knowing that in order to ensure that I manage my own risk, I need to build the networks and the relationships, and risk is managed through those relationships. And ultimately, we will be able to make an impact that is beyond just what we're here for, but there is a greater good out there.
Sean, thank you very much. I want to close off with a quote that you said, what I've learned is that when you stay far away from people, risk feels high. When you move closer, risk becomes clearer. And I want to encourage all our listeners, move closer. If you think there's potential, move closer, and you will more clearly be able to see the opportunity that is there to be the hands and the feet. Thank you very much, Sean. Thank you, listeners. It has been great spending this time with you and looking forward to the next session.
Yes, Ashlyn, it's been such a great privilege and opportunity to have a chat with you on this and just share the insights. So thank you to the listeners and hope you're blessed.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.